right, welcome back. Your man of the hour, Sully, is here with another guest. We are talking to podcaster, filmmaker, model, and actress Ruby Robledo, straight from the heart of Dallas, Texas. Welcome.
Thank you. You're missing casting director, agent, manager.
Well, I just thought filmmaker was implication.
We do it all. You know,
we that's the freaking all.
Crazy thing about this industry. Like, I seriously, you know, got into it initially for acting, you know, and that was like a huge, huge turning point in my life. Like, it was a huge milestone because I actually figured out what the heck I wanted to do with my life. And I had known it before. Obviously, like, you know, it was because I got started late. I knew that I was a good actress even before I started this journey or decided to start the journey. Just so many things got in the way because I ended up, you know, being a young mom and having to get to work and having to take care of my kids. And I was involved in stupid relationships that kind of like deterred me from my goals.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So then I finally get to like a safe space and I'm with a good guy and I'm, you know, with my family and I'm just like talking all the time nonstop about how I'm just tired of doing things that I don't want to do. You know, like I want to do what I want to do, which is acting. And, you know, the guy that I was with, he finally, you know, was like, you know, I'm kind of tired of you just saying that over and over again, but I don't see you doing anything about it. And I was kind of offended. Like, he offended me at that point. I was like, geez, okay, wow. Tell me like it is. And he was like, no, seriously. He's like, I don't know why you just don't do it. And I'm like, well, it's easier said than done, obviously. You know, like, I have a family, you know. I had to, like, explain to him, you know, I literally have to start from scratch because I don't know anybody. I've never done this before. I literally have to learn on my own everything. And he was just like, okay, so start, you know.
What's next?
Like, yeah, but I'm like, you're going to have to support me. That's the thing. I said, because we have kids. So sometimes, you know, you're going to have to take over things and I'm going to have to trust that you can do that. And I'm going to have to also trust that you'll be okay with me, you know, making these movies. I mean, you know, it's hard having a relationship when you're an actor, you know, as I'm sure a lot of people know that.
1000%. What did you go to school originally for?
I went to vocational school. So it was like a trade school, you know, like after high school. And it was for a freaking medical assistant certificate that I was, you know, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Obviously, like, I'm just going to be honest. Like, I was just like going with the flow. Oh, I heard that this school is a trade school and, you know, you can go for a medical assistant. I was like, I think I can do that. And I would just like, you know, go. And it was like the worst mistake of my life. I should have never done it because I owed loans from it and I didn't even get my certificate. Yeah, it was a sham. It literally was because the school literally got shut down because they were scamming people. Yeah.
Isn't it wild too when you go back to your folks half the time and all the time, just the elders, they have it about them. They're just like, oh, but you still want something on your resume for work and training. And you're just like, well, or maybe you just give someone your word and you work your ass off.
Right. No. Yeah. And you can always.
You don't go to college to get cash register duties. That comes.
Yeah. No, like I never wanted college. Like college was never a thing for me whenever I was, you know, in school.
I went to college.
Like, oh, I want to go to college.
And I regretted it.
Yeah. And a lot of people do. And that was
just get your associates and get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And that, and nowadays they have high schools that are like, colleges, they're like collegiate, I think that's what they're called,
something like that.
They
give you the scholar, it's a mixture, I think, of the scholarships, and anyone can correct us if we're wrong. We'll actually know you're listening, but it's just a matter of, yeah, this is like just all the ones who want to get out of the jail that is regular high school and just start just getting some extra credits, save yourself some time and effort down the road. But it can be even harder and more stressful because, again, you don't really know what the workload's like until you've signed up. So it's just.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, that's good because that I wish I would have done that instead. I think I could have. But it's basically like you graduate with your high school and your associates, you know,
Bingo.
Your diploma and your associates. So that's kind of cool. But yeah. anyways, I never wanted to go to college. So it was out of the question, period. So I just did the medical assistant thing. That went bad. And then I just went into IT at that point, which
Bingo.
Is like
and
the career that I had before I started.
You've acting. Really been kicking ass on the IT frontier. How would you describe kind of the current landscape of where it is now?
I mean, it's mostly everybody working from home, you know, because of the pandemic. Like, they figured out that a lot of people who, you know, work in IT, these are like job duties and responsibilities that can be taken care of at home. You know, you literally just need your laptop, and, you know, most jobs provide that for you now. They provide you with the laptop and everything that you need for you to do the work from home. So that's the landscape of it now, which is Sweet. Good. You know, it's easy, but like I said, it wasn't my passion. That's not what I wanted to do. I was only good at doing IT because I started off working at a service desk, like a call center service desk, right?
Just like any kind of what would otherwise be a secretary or desk clerk job, you moved up from that saying, hey, I know what needs to be in the feed and how to process
all this. And the reason why I got in is because Parkland took a shot on me. The manager there took a shot on me as a service assistant. Prior to that, I had no, you know, IT experience, nothing on my resume. I had a bunch of admin customer service jobs. So they knew that it was good that I had customer service background. I also had call center background, and they knew that I wasn't as like IT experienced, but I still knew some. Like, I was still tech savvy. I mean, because I grew up in the age of computers, you know, when they were up and coming. I chatted on MSN like every night, you know, with my cousin. Nice. So I knew, I knew a bit of
everything. There's a callback.
Technology class. Yeah. And so MSN. That was, you know, good. I was grateful for that because that is what gave me, you know, that advantage, you know, because he started asking me, well, how do you, you know, how would you troubleshoot a printer? You know, give me those steps, you know.
And you're like, give me 10, give me 20. I got this.
So, yeah, so I started at the services. I learned a bunch of, you know, IT stuff from there. And then I did my 3 years there. And then, you know, there was a back end team where it was like more IT focused, you know, as far as like security and, you know, spyware and all that kind of like in-depth, you know, IT stuff. So then I moved to that department, and I only knew what I was doing there because, of course, like, I'm trainable. Like, you train me, you tell me what to do, I'm good, I'm a fast learner. If I know somewhat what I'm doing, you know, then I'll pick it up really fast, which is what happened there. And so I didn't want to go for my certificates or nothing like that in IT because, you know, all the years that I was there for like, what, 6-7 years in that department. It was access management. And so we dealt with like granting access and stuff like that through the organization. It was a lot of access. I mean, it's Parkland, it's huge, right?
Right.
So yeah, that's what that job was. So while I was at that job, I was able to go do my acting because I accumulated PTO there. Like, I actually had a job where I could accumulate PTO.
Off. Yeah.
Yep. And I would take my paid time off and I would fly out to Georgia back and forth.
And that was where Scream Queen, Lar Park, Lincoln of Friday the 13th, Part 7 trained you?
No.
That was in Dallas. Okay.
She was in Dallas. And she actually was my first ever like acting coach. When I started off, you know, saying I was going to go ahead and start acting, I just looked up like a bunch of YouTube videos, honestly. I mean, we live in the age of Google and every information is at the tip of
YouTube,
you know,
really
fingers.
Did take off like around 2010 to where it was like, why didn't I have this specialist on YouTube as my trainer?
Exactly. And so
instead
I
of
looked
this
up
professor
this agent.
Who's full of himself.
Yeah, so I really should say that this agent that I found on YouTube was my first acting coach, but not really, because Ms. Lar was like hands-on with me. But this lady named Wendy Elaine Wright, I think that's her name, she's like a big time like agent in LA and in Hollywood. Yeah, she's like very well known. So I started watching her videos and she started kind of giving like steps, you know, what I should do. She was like, if you don't have any kind of like background, like from theater and school, she's like, you need to start building up that resume, you know, with credits, because that's what's going to get you in films and stuff like that.
I see what you mean. It's her, she's part of the group Talent Managers for Actors.
Yeah, there you go. So she was like, go get some credits on your resume. Start there first. Go, you know, take theater, you know, acting classes. You need to take acting courses to add to your resume so people see that you are experienced, you know. So I started there. I started trying to get, like, gigs that, well, I had to get gigs that were non-paid, obviously, because I was just starting out.
Gotta
so
build
I needed
it up.
To yep. get work. Yeah. That's what you have to do as an actor when you're starting out and you have nothing. You have to do a lot of work for free.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah. So I tried out theater and I hated it. Like, I don't know what it is about theater. I can watch it and I can enjoy it, but me trying out for it and me being involved with it, I didn't like it for some reason, I guess.
You're not the only one. Comedian, famous comedian Andy Richter noted that when he was going to a few improv tropes, he left a few of them because the teachers were such stuck up pricks. Very hard asses on deciding who was funny or not. And some theater group at UTA, I did have some pals who were like, I want to slip my fucking wrists already just because they could do gaffing and again, camera and stage combat and all the other acting groups. But there were some acting groups, unfortunately, as we hate to say, as we're finding out in this post mental health age, some of them are just very toxic or just very stuck up, and some are great and very welcoming. But you unfortunately don't know until you've spent, you know, a certain amount of time and definitely way too much money.
Right. Yeah. No, this bad experience for me wasn't even like when we started or management or anything, because I didn't even get to be there. I didn't even get to be involved with rehearsals or anything like that. I didn't get past the audition, basically, because I only did like 3 or 4. And I found out, I was like, I don't think I'm going to like this because of the whole singing and acting type thing. I think I was like, I really want to just hone in on my acting because I'm very, very, very like insecure about my singing.
You'd be a cool singer.
So I don't know. I'm just very insecure. So, and I love music. Like, music is another passion of mine. Like, music is my life, basically. Music and movies and all the entertainment industry is my life. But, so once I figured out that theater wasn't my thing, I was like, okay, well, what else can I do? And, you know, I don't remember how I came across it or if I learned it from Wendy, but student films. You know, I started looking up casting calls, and there were a bunch of student films because here in Dallas, you know, we have UTA and stuff like that. So that's how I started getting my work. That's how I started getting stuff on my resume, is I started working with film students. And then I gained that experience and that knowledge that they knew, that they had. And I started observing everything and learning everything. And I just like ate it all up. And I was like, look, I got the college experience and knowledge without going. I was working with a bunch of college film students, and it was great. You know, I don't think there's not one student film that I did that was like bad experience, like as far as like the people that I worked with. They were all very nice.
That's good.
Very awesome people from UTA, you know, film school. That's even where I met my good friend Nate. You know,
yep,
the film director.
Native Vila, baby. Yep. We'll have him on this Saturday.
Yeah, you are awesome. So that's where we, you know, developed our relationship, our friendship, you know, through the love of film.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
And wanting to, you know, make films. So, yeah, after a couple of years of doing free work, and oh my God, it was horrible. There was like some experiences where I was like, wow, like people are really, they don't know. Here. Yeah, there's some weird, first of all, there's people who tried to sexually harass me. There was people who wanted to like have me do things without even me like being paid for it. Like they wanted nudity and stuff like that, and they didn't want to.
I remember that. I met one of those pricks on another unrelated film set that was a shit show, and you were like, "Man, this guy's he curses film sets anywhere he goes. He says inappropriate shit."
Just recently, that guy died from COVID. Like he died like a year or two ago.
That's karma for you.
I was like, wow.
That's karma.
But there was another guy too. Like there's a bunch of people in the industry where they're like, oh, you know, this person is new to acting and she doesn't know, you know, yeah, like she don't have a manager or an agent.
I remember you telling me that there was this one guy who, instead of just asking for a different type of delivery or something, would just basically just, it was one of those, he'd be like, oh, you're not an actor. And it's like, well, don't call yourself a director if you can't ask what you want. You're just going to shit talk us behind our backs.
Oh, no, it was some other guy where he was like, he was taking advantage of the fact that he was like telling me about a movie. And he didn't even, like, he was saying all these lies. Like, he was like, I'm producing it and I'm funding it and all this and that. And they're like, so I'm really interested in you, but I want to meet you first. And I want to see if you're really like committed to this role and all this bullshit just for me to like meet him up at a random park, which I shouldn't have done. Like if I know now what I know now, like I definitely would have been like red flag, buddy. Like if you want an audition, send me the sides. I'll self-tape it.
I'll meet you at the studio. It's not going to be at your private house. What the hell?
Something, right? Like it was so stupid of me, but there's people out there like that, that'll take advantage of someone who doesn't know. But yeah, so also while I was doing my free work, that's whenever I had to pay some money. I had to pay an investment. No, not to audition, but to get my acting coach, to get my Miss Laura Park Lincoln. I, you know, had to pay her to give me all the skills that I needed, you know, help me with that. And then
what lessons stuck out the most?
Thinking about it now, I would say that every single time that I have an audition or that I'm going for a role, I always think about the notes that she gave me whenever she would help me with my self-tapes. And also the fact that she gave me the knowledge that I need for me to know, like, if someone's trying to scam me or not. Like, because I would never have known that, you know, until later on. You know, in my acting career, that, you know, you don't ever like basically like if someone's presenting a role to you, you don't let them like lowball you or anything like that. Like you get your worth, like make sure that they're at least like you ask questions like, am I getting a stipend? Are you going to cover my gas? You know, stuff like that, right? Do I need to be in wardrobe? Do I need to be camera ready whenever I get there? So those were like all little things that, you know, she taught me that I needed to learn, you know, to be able to, you know, tackle this business or get through this business. So I'm very grateful for her.
Very neat.
Yeah. And so then I did, I think like a whole year was her, and I had to pay like, $3,000, something like that. But it was like an investment. Like I said, it was money well spent because I needed it. And so that was a credit that I got to put. Yeah, that was the credit that I got to put on my resume. And so
that's now, in recent years, you got married actually on the reality show Bridezillas. You were on the Miami equivalent, the Telemundo equivalent of Caso Cerrado. Have you been tempted to do any of those other kind of amusing reality show appearances?
Not really. When I did the reality shows, that was the point in time where I stopped doing free work. I was like, okay, I've already had like 2 to 3 years maybe of doing free work here and there. I'm like, no more. You know, I have my credits. And I have my experience, I have my schooling. Now I can actually sit there and tell people, you know, or go for roles that are paid only. So
nice.
Bridezillas was one that was paid. Yeah, Casa Cerrado was also paid. Casa Cerrado was like, we'll fly you out here to Miami. We'll give you your hotel room to stay in. We'll give you breakfast and lunch at the hotel. And then we'll pay you, you know, for your appearance on the show. So I was like, okay. And then Bridezillas, they offered a large lump sum. They're like, we'll come to you, to your house. We'll follow you the whole week of your wedding. You know, you don't got to worry about nothing. Except for I had to do my own makeup and hair. And that's kind of what I didn't like about that. Because I was like, oh, I didn't used to do my makeup as well as I do now. Like, and I never do my hair. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have me looking like crap on TV, whatever.
With this, these experiences, you think, kind of encouraged you to just keep being your own boss?
Yeah, pretty much. But to answer your question, like I don't want to do reality. Like
no,
not as much, because there's a lot of like misassumptions, I guess, because people literally
are your TV host.
People literally don't know. Yeah, they don't know that this is all that most of it is scripted. And so, like, they would call me, like, all these names on YouTube, like, in the comment section whenever Bridezillas. Yeah, they'd be like, oh, my gosh, she's such a bitch. Why would he marry her? Blah, blah, blah. Little did they know, you know, like, my husband and I, like, orchestrated that whole bit of me, like, you know, shaving his head.
Let alone it is, like, Cheaters, which I have been on. And they
exactly. It's the same thing.
They assume that, yes, well, he must be a real person. It's like, no.
Right.
Why would you think it's real?
Actor, dude.
I would hear the same thing about Jerry Springer back in the day. They would encourage people in the audience to get all rowdy and start throwing shit. So it is one of those where it's just people have to kind of check their logic at the door. It's like, this is way too neat to be happening. And
this is
the
entertainment.
Time,
yeah.
Right.
It's just entertainment, guys. It's all scripted, but. Yeah, so that's the only reason why I kind of don't want to, you know, do reality.
No,
I'd rather do, yeah, film and TV and stuff like that, because
you could do a sarcastic
people know that.
Game show.
That would be different, you know, like if I'm hosting or, you know, game shows and hosting and stuff like that, like I would love that. But like being a whole different like persona for a reality show, like to say, you know, like this is a reality and this is how I really am, you know, like I just didn't like it. I love working with the people on the Bridezillas crew, though. Like, they were my favorite. The producer, Mickey.
They were very nice people.
Yeah, like, we, like, bonded that whole week, and we just became, like, really good friends, like, me and the whole crew. So, that was a good experience, which is what I like the most, like, 90%, or I'll probably say, like, 75%. 75% of what I like the most about being on film sets and TV sets is just being like making friends and getting to know new people, you know, and the crew and the cast. It's just fun, you know, being behind the scenes.
That's very, very, very neat.
Yes.
Have you been tempted to maybe even do with all some of the online web series you were part of, have you ever been tempted to maybe do a documentary web series like about like Hispanic heritage, even casting for indie productions?
Whenever I do casting, I mean, I'm always looking for films that are, you know,
about
part
that.
Of the like POC, you know, LGBTQ, like a bunch of minority groups. Like I'm always, you know, in for doing stuff like that. As far as like doing a web series on heritage and stuff like that, we did have or we do have currently.
You've had a few. I just wonder if you
a podcast. Yeah, it's a podcast that we do based on like the histories of all the people that that immigrated and that have been here in the U.S. Like the different cultures. So we give like a little bit of background of the different cultures that have been here. And we did Puerto Rico, like their history of their peoples here in the U.S. We did Mexican as well. So yeah, we have a podcast that we've done. We need to continue it, but we have to get like a Native American guest to give, you know, a Native American history on their end, and then we have to book like we wanted. Essentially, the idea was to book a guest from a certain culture for them here in the U.S. So we need to continue it, but we haven't been able to.
So you've touched on a lot, and you've done so many things, and you still have this craving for all kinds of entertainment positions and jobs that are likely going to come your way, but you got to keep working on it outside of busy day job. What are some tips and tricks that you've found have been very useful that you think others could definitely utilize who are trying to get into this type of career? Tips and tricks that you recommend?
So yeah, for like someone like me, because it's very, very hard to like maintain a family and, you know, do acting and casting and all the other things that I do in the entertainment industry, I would be like so lost without my calendar. So definitely use your calendar, have it on your phone, write it down, whatever you need to do, just so that you keep all of your events and your jobs organized. It's also good to have a job where you can, you know, take PTO, you know, they offer you paid time off. That mm-hmm. way you can, you know, miss days of work to go and act and go do stuff without, you know, missing out on money. Cause that's really the hard thing, you know, as a aspiring actress or actor, you got to have that paycheck still. I mean, you still gotta work for a living because you still gotta eat, you know. And right. Your acting gigs are just, you know, here and there until you make it really big to where you're like able to work nonstop, you know, in the acting industry. And just, you know, that's when you know that you have a career, you know, in acting. Right now, you know, it's just it's me still trying to get to that point, which I am in the process of. Also, like starting to move to Georgia because it's so saturated over there, and that's like the best place to be. That's another tip that I would give an aspiring actor, to go to an area where it's very, very highly saturated for you to be able to do nonstop work, even if it's background work at that. You know, background work is still paid work. So,
totally.
And big movies, you know, I've been able to do background for big shows and big movies, and that's, you know, awesome to see on my resume that I was on. And I was background for one of my favorite shows, Stranger Things. I got to be in, you know, background.
Did you really?
Before. Nice. Yes. And I got to see myself too. Like, I was like, hey, I'm right there. Even though, like,
you're not someone's second. Hand double. Yeah. Or just back of my face at a restaurant.
Amazing. Yeah. That whole time just being there on the set, you know, and being able to, like, see the Duffer Brothers, like, direct and stuff like that. I could die. I wanted to stay there forever.
That's badass.
But yeah. I know.
Very badass.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.